Elizabeth Harrington, Reel 5.
Were you able to keep in touch with your mother, with your family, while you were in India?
Oh, yes. Because we wrote airmail letters. Airmail letters were out then. And when the quake, when we'd got away from the quake, we sent a letter, an airmail letter, to my mother, telling her we were all safe. And I believe it went halfway around Brighton. And, oh, yes. She didn't get it for a long while, but she did get it. And I saw it afterwards.
Has she heard about the quake?
Oh, she'd read about the quake, and she was nearly crawling up the wall and dying. But when I got back from India, there she was, on the quayside. So she didn't die, did she? And she was on the quayside waiting for me with my sister. They'd been there all night. But when we were in the Solent, we came back, I think it was on the Lancashire. Oh, it's a lovely boat. We had a gorgeous journey home, but except for that I was so sad I didn't want to go. And we anchored in the Solent, and we were so disappointed, all of us, because we were all going to have fish and chips. None of us had fish and chips because we were anchored in the Solent all night. And you see, in those days, you didn't know where you were going, if you were going. You see, the War Office didn't tell you until the morning before you arrived. They didn't give you your orders. And you didn't know if you were going to get married quarters or you weren't. We did. We were very lucky. But we went to Deep Cut, I think, and my friend, I've had a friend all these years who, funnily enough, has travelled all round the world with me, and she is a school friend, but her husband happened to be a battery quartermaster sergeant in another battery. That's Ruffle, the one I told you about. And she, wherever I've gone, I've looked out of the window and my friend's been there. I've been very, very lucky because I always had a special friend with me. Well, not with me, to help me, put it that way. But it was a funny thing. I went down to Hyderabad Sindh from India, and I had a little boy, and I called him Robin. And she went 5,000 miles up, and we never write to one another. That would be too simple. And she had a little boy, and she called it Robin. And they were born practically on the same day. So you see, and she went to school with me. Only she's a little bit better off than I was. And our lives have intertwined all along. And her husband ended up a major, and my husband ended up a major.
After you were in Quetta, you went in due course to the North West Frontier.
Yes, we went up
How
to Nowshera.
How did that compare with other places you'd
Oh,
been?
It didn't compare. Quetta was beautiful. But of course the quake came after we'd been there about 3 months, so we didn't get a chance to really see it. But Nowshera was a... Well... It was a hill, it was a station where there weren't a lot of people, and yet there were a lot more. But it was a funny thing, perhaps coincidence stretches a little bit too far, but it's the truth. My friend met me at the station on Nowshera from Hyderabad Sindh, and she said, "Guess where you're living?" And I said, "I don't know." She said, "Next door to me." Now that is peculiar. Every time I've opened a window and I've been stationed there and she didn't know, and I've seen her there or along the block or up the top of the block. But it was a more populated station. You know, there were more people in it. And
you mean more British people or more people
altogether? Oh no, army people. And we did more things. You know, we knew the same people, but we did more. There were more dances, and there were more tennis matches, and cups to be won, you know, and more schools. The school was there, and one time I remember, it would be me, I went to Peshawar, which was, in those days, not allowed... It was too near the frontier of the Khyber Pass, you see. And, of course, women, I was stupid, weren't allowed to go up there. And I went up there with a couple of people. I don't know who they were. Well, Ruffle wasn't one of them. And we darn nearly got locked in the gates, because they lock them at sunset. And we darn nearly got locked in the gates. And I saw the actual bazaar, the cattle market, and all the Pathans sitting round. And as I say, it was most interesting. And then there were lots more missionaries up there. Just a little way out past the Black Rocks was a missionary station, a YM. And they used to give dances. And this isn't exaggeration or lies. I went with Ruffle. We were supposed to go with four men carrying a revolver and only two women. But you had to have escorts. And we went up to the Black Rocks to the YM dancing. And we got through all right. And then we came back. We got through all right. But the two fellas behind us got their throats cut. You see, these Black Rocks was a gully, and the Wallers used to stretch a rope across and throw the Gary Waller off his stride, and then they didn't like you at all. Pathans don't like you anyway. They're a very warlike race. They're a very proud race. They're lovely-looking people, but they're a very warlike race, and they had these rifles, great big long things, with the most beautiful butts, long as that.
About 3 feet long.
Oh, they must have been. And they had the most beautiful curved coloured butts, all done with silver and everything. I saw one once, and they really were. And these rifles, could they fire? They just get up in those hills. And because you see, sometimes there were forays up in those hills. And, You couldn't help seeing them, and some of them came into the town to sell or to trade, and they walked proudly. You know, they were really, some of them quite blonde, blue eyes, some of them. And the women were lovely. The women always did thrill me. The way they walked with these saris, no matter how dirty the saris were, with faggots on their head, bundles of faggots, the jungle women. Oh, big bundle of faggots. I couldn't even have picked it up. Never mind, put it on my head and walk with it. And the carriage was fantastic. It was really glorious to watch. I used to stand and look at them walking along because I thought how beautifully they walked. And then the women carry these pots on their head and Lord knows what. And oh, the carriage is... And they were so beautiful, some of them. And then I got mixed up with the mayor's daughter, but that was down in Hyderabad. I had to go and give a lecture there on East is East and West is West, and never the twain shall meet. What a muck-up I made of that one, too. I quoted Kipling, and they didn't like him anyway, because Kipling was Anglo anyway, wasn't he? And but up in Nowshera, we had lots of tennis courts. Of course, tennis was the game. Lots of dances, that was good. Lots of people, and of course I had my friend. And we had a very good school for our children, because my children were with me. Not the other two, the other one in there. And of course it was such a nice climate, we had no servants. We were just, you know...
No cook?
No, nobody. We did it ourselves.
Was that because you chose to, or was that traditional then?
Well, Ruffle didn't have any. I think because it was traditional. I expect the officers' wives had servants, but we didn't see much of them. You never saw much of officers' wives. You saw them vaguely, and they came to your house one afternoon graciously, but you didn't see very much of them. Not as much even as you saw in England. Officers, of course, weren't allowed in your quarters unless they had a very good excuse. There was a gulf. Officer was an officer. And an ordinary man was an ordinary man. I mean, there was no question of the mixing with you at all.
Were unmarried soldiers allowed in your quarters?
Oh, no. No troops were allowed in the quarters unless they came on a message. You didn't meet them. They escorted you home if they'd escorted you somewhere, but you didn't go in for meeting strange soldiers in... I mean, let's face it, if you went to, if I went to a dance, I was supposed to be quite a dancer. If I went to a dance, I'd have six or eight fellas waiting at the door to book the dance with me before I got in the hall. So you didn't mix up much. And then, of course, you practically made your own clothes in Noshira. The jersey wasn't quite so effective there. You know, it's more English there. There were lovely gardens and houses and green lawns and parks. There was a beautiful playground park in Noshira. And then, of course, if you were very adventurous, you could go to Peshawar or you could go to the hills. You see, my friend, I didn't. I was not long enough up there. But my friend went to the hills, used to go to the hills in a dooley, carried by four men, you see, up the steep parts. But she used to go to the hills every time. But I didn't. I'd never been to the hills. Because we lived in a place where we went to the sea for a fortnight and we didn't have a hill station. And when we got to Quetta, there was an earthquake, so we got twisted out of that lot, didn't we? No, Noshira was more social life, more people. In other words, we'd come into a town and there was more going on, like Women's Institute things like that. And British Legions and things. Wasn't that sort of thing, but more clubs. And you could have, you could thoroughly enjoy yourself. You could up there. You did nothing else, I didn't, but enjoy myself in India.
Ah. Were you ever involved with any British civilian women?
Not in Noshira. Never in Noshira. No, and I don't even remember any British civilian women in my tour of India. British civilian, yes, one. She was at, I think they called that, it was like the Union Jack Club, Sandy's in Quetta. Sandy's home or Sandy's hostel or Sandy's something. I think she came down in the earthquake. No civilian women at all. Mostly, they were, the people I mixed with were Anglo-Indians or wives, because there weren't many civilians, only the Anglos. There weren't, well, there were so few, weren't there? I mean, life was, the troops, the railway were Anglo-Indians, the troops managed the rest, and the there wasn't, you know, we had gymkhanas, but they were mostly people. You know, the people we mixed with all the time. You met the same people every time. In fact, when I first went to a gymkhana in Hyderabad Sindh, I was looking over the Maidan, and I saw a most beautiful tussore suit on a woman. And I thought, oh boy, that looks glorious. And she had a, mostly wore hats if we didn't wear a topi, and she had this straw hat on and this beautiful shantung suit. And when she turned round, it was the girl from two streets where I lived. And she'd married in the Royal Sussex Regiment, and the Royal Sussex Regiment had come up for a thingamabob. And that was, and yet that girl came from the same type of home that I came to. You should have seen that suit. It was glorious, it really was. All lovely thick shantung.
Did any of the soldiers and their wives have daughters who were old enough to perhaps be dating other soldiers? It was all young children.
No, they were all young children when I was there. My daughter was only 10 or 12, 10, and she was at school anyway. No. None of the, they were young children. Some, I thought some of the officers' wives, no. Colonel Granite had no children. And the others had children, but mostly, in a way, I think, in those years, the officers' wives left their children at home in boarding schools. They didn't bring them out. Some did. But very rarely, it wasn't supposed to be very good for children in the tropics. But I couldn't see that. I mean, But some children got malaria, and if you got malaria, it was very bad then, very bad indeed. And bilharzia, if you, in polluted streams, if you swam or anything like that. But then, again, we had the sea, didn't we? Off Karachi. I went to the Smuggler's Bazaar in Karachi. That was good. That's where I bought that box. And that's all, and these things that I've got here. But I used to wander. I hadn't any set program or any set people. But I used to wonder. I used to like to know how people lived. Jungle women. How their houses were built. Where they washed the clothes. It was funny to see the Dobi or the Dobi's woman bashing them all on the stones by the river, you know, and how they ever dried so white, I never did know. And a piece of odd soap they'd have. They had the most prehistoric things to do it with, but it came up beautifully and all beautifully ironed, and the Dobi used to do that. We never did any washing until I came home. It used to take me 3 or 4 hours to get even started in the morning. It was terrible to come home. I was crying my eyes out for weeks because it was so lovely in India. It was terrible coming home.
Where you were stationed in India, there were just a few married families and a great many unmarried soldiers.
Uh-huh.
Did you have a regimental brothel?
No. They didn't have a regimental brothel, but you must remember in those days we were dear little innocents. And we didn't know anything at all about brothels or lack of or what's name. But things came to our ears just the same. They didn't have a regimental one. But when the fellows got VD, which often they did, you would hear somebody say, oh, he was round the back with the so-and-so, so-and-so. And no, they didn't. They went round the back with one of the women. And they were lucky if they didn't get VD, because that was pretty bad, I believe. But then you've got to remember, I was a very delicate, nurtured woman, and I didn't hear or see anything of that at all. And if a man... There was one man that I was very friendly with, a nice man. I don't know how old he would be. He was one of the troops, and we talked. One day, where did we talk? On the tennis court, somewhere like that, I think we talked. And he ran away, and he became a Sikh. And he was talking about the Sikh religion. I believe he deserted the army, and he was talking about the Sikh religion, about the bracelet and the hair and the turban never coming off, and the hair that takes you up to heaven or something. And he was explaining all this to me, and it's all very hush-hush. And the next I heard that he had run away. And he said to me one time, I'll make my way to Lahore. Because Lahore was the melting pot for us all that side of the island. I mean, when you said Hyderabad, Sindh, there was a Hyderabad Deccan, and Bombay and Delhi and Calcutta. Well, we used to call those England because they were, well, very frightfully far back. But where we were, Lahore was about the biggest station, and that wasn't very much more. And, I never did, I forget his name, but I remember that bloke went to be a Sikh. He went away or ran away, and that... but brothels, I didn't hear of any brothels, but then I wasn't supposed to, was I? And VD, vaguely, I did hear about it, because perhaps at a dance you'd miss a face, and you'd say, well, oh, he's in the hospital. Well, you wouldn't know, but you wouldn't be that dumb, would you? And that was that. But you've got to remember that at the time I was in India, how old would I be? About 26. Not very old. Well, I was supposed to be nurtured. I'm not as old as the girls nowadays are at 26. So, I mean, I was sort of very well looked after. But no, I didn't hear about that. In Germany I did. In Germany I saw them. But not in India. India was one of the places where that sort of thing went on, but was hidden. Well, it had to go on, didn't it? I remember once, I could tell you a story, but I'd better not. No, it's quite clean, though. I was walking past the lines. The lines. Where was I in the line? With two rows of huts. Two rows of army huts. And I was walking past the lines, and I heard a voice say, "And I say number two, sir." And the other voice said, "And I say number one, sir." And the other one said, "Well, you pay a forfeit." So I went back home and I said to Bill, "That's a funny game they're playing." I went down the lines. "That's a really funny game they're playing. What is it?" And when I told him, he said, "Yeah, but you don't know the forfeits." And it was the forfeits that made the game, but I still didn't know the forfeits, but I could guess what was going on. The troops were playing a special game, and the forfeits were the what's name of the game. But quite candidly, you never heard bad language, and you never heard anybody treated you with the utmost respect. Nobody was rude. Nobody said a bad word. In fact, you were like a piece of delicate china that was polished and put on the shelf, you know, if you'd let it. If you wanted to know things and go places, which I did, and go on your own, which I also did, then whatever you got in trouble you got into, you got out of. I mean, I wasn't supposed to go to the bazaar by myself. But when I look back, the things I did were stupid. But I went. I used to go on the train to Karachi. I saw the first factories built on the side of the road when the Gandhi started mixing them up, didn't he? I didn't know it was Gandhi at the time. I wasn't politically minded. But he made rope factories, and they started making towels, didn't they, the first things. Well, I saw those factories, and I even went for a 10-mile bike ride. I was going to bike to Karachi until I was stopped. And I was stopped forcibly. I was going to spend the night out and go down on the road to Karachi on my bike, take my refreshments and Lord knows what, and take a sleep. We had a bedding roll. We didn't have a sleeping bag. We had a bedding roll, and we all took our bedding rolls wherever we went. But I was...
Did your husband get in trouble because you didn't behave in
the way? Oh, yes, he often got in trouble over me. Often and often he got into trouble over me. And once he was told to keep his wife in order or else... And I wasn't the type that was kept in order. I was very rebellious. I didn't like the establishment. I loathed the establishment. I didn't see how any other body could be any different from any other body. I felt that in their way everybody had something to contribute, even if it was the dirtiest, lousiest little kid. I mean, of course, I learned a lot. I learned that they won't take life. That's why so many lice are running around. I learned that they have reincarnation, that however wicked you are, you come back as a snake or a louse or an earwig or some damn fine thing that's unusual. And I also learned that they have a great belief in their gods, and I'm not so sure that it's not right. And I also saw that the vicar was way out of this world. He was never in it. I used to go over to him a lot. He was an old boy. And he lived in a bungalow in the middle of the Maya Dam where nothing else was. And he had rows and rows and rows of books. That's where I used to go over to him for. He had more books than I've ever seen in my life. And he wasn't even in this world, that old boy. The Reverend Bartels, we corresponded with him until petition, and he died. But he had rows and rows of books. I used to wander in there, and he had a bearer, and he had thousands of carpets on the floor. I've never seen so many Persian carpets, one on top of the other. and rows and rows and rows and rows of books. And I used to go over there, and I'm sure he never saw me, and I'd pick out a book and sit down. Oh, he was a good man, Mr. Reverend Bartels. You've nearly come to the end now, I take it. Good.
Did you think it was odd or natural for the British to be in India?
No.
I mean, for people to be in someone else's country?
No. I never queried that the army should be there, because I learned after I'd been in there a while that several of the sort of administrative people had done quite good jobs in India. And you realise when you are in India that the natives could never rule alone, because there is so much bribery and corruption. If you want a job, and maybe it was only doing the washing for the British troops, you've got to put pice every time to get that job. And everywhere you go in India is bribery and corruption. Every person who got a job paid bribery and a tax. Not a tax, a tax on bribery. If the milk wallah came, you bet your life a pice went to someone. If a man swept the doorstep, you bet your life that if he got that job, a pice or something went to it. The bunyas lived on the people. The bunyas had them like that in a hold, because they have to have a good funeral and a good wedding. And they will go to any lengths at all to keep their heads up on a wedding and a funeral. And therefore, the bunyas lend the money at over 100% interest. And the consequence is they're always in debt. There is never a time when an Indian is not in debt to the bunya. And girls, they don't like girls, because they have to give a dowry. And the dowry comes from the bunya, unless they're very, very wealthy. But every time it was bribery and corruption. And I think myself that even now I read, I study, that is going on. There is bribery and corruption everywhere you go. No man can do anything without giving a pice or giving some money to people. And I'm quite sure that that goes on the same, because it's a way of life to the Indian. If she wanted to bring in a load of wood on her head, she paid a pice to somebody for that privilege. And that is true. And that is why my ayah, who became a widow, got beaten up by the bunya. Because, well, the bunya didn't beat her up. The bunyans, whatever you have them, beat her up. You see, and if you work for a woman, like me, or my husband didn't interfere with the work. If you work for me, she still pays that little tax. And everywhere you go now, it is still the same, because I've just finished reading a book on India, and the same thing is happening. The fellas, I read Kipling once, and the bit that made me laugh, well, I've read all of Kipling, but the bit that made me laugh was in Kim, where the wallah was dishing out the tickets for the railway for Kim, and he threw Kim a ticket. And it was to the next station, but he was charging him for the one to Ambala. And you see, that is what goes on. Indians can't read or write. So they go and ask for a ticket to some place, and he'd give them a ticket to, and that cost about fourpence, and he'd give them a 100 rupee ticket. He'd give them a fourpenny ticket. Anywhere he can make money, he'll make money. And that is why you'll never... I wouldn't mind betting that in these communities in England, if you searched it and you really made a research on the subject, you would find that they were still paying. And I wouldn't mind betting that, because it's ingrained in the Indian or Pakistan or Sikh.